Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Red Seat Podcast.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
Featuring Keaton DeRocher and Bob Osgood.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. I am your host for today's episode, Keaton DeRocher, and I am joined today by Bob Osgood of Over the Monster for episode 314, good old Pisode. Jake is missing tonight as he had the honor of being asked to be a judge in a Baby of the Year competition. So you got me and Bob. Bob, how you doing?
I'm all right. I was a little offended that I didn't get asked to be that judge as well. I know that there was a pretty elaborate crew that they chose from, but, you know, good for Jake.
Would you have voted for Bart Harley Jarvis?
Is that?
We don't get the reference to you.
No, but I don't get of the references you guys make around
you
here.
You never do. That is very true. Well, on today's episode, besides I think you should leave sketches, we'll be talking about even more injuries for the Red Sox. They just won't stop. And also, because it is the pie episode, we'll be handing out slices of pie in portions that we deem necessary on a bunch of little topics there. And then we'll also get to some listener questions. You got anything else, Bob, before we dive on into it, or you're just ready to go?
No. Can't wait. Can't wait to give out some pie. Let's do this.
All right, so bunch of injuries slash roster moves since the last time we had a podcast. First, the Red Sox acquired first baseman Garrett Cooper from the Cubs for cash considerations. They will pay him $1.25 million of the $1.5 million the Cubs signed him for, and a corresponding move, Pablo Reyes designated for assignment. Bob, thoughts on either of those moves or this one as a whole?
I guess we'll start with Garrett Cooper, the guy that is here now, and of course in his first game that he started, leaves the game getting hit by a pitch, and all I could think of was that this dude's going to be on the 60-day IL right next to Tristan Casas, and we're going to be back to square one.
But yeah.
I couldn't believe what I was watching there when he came out of the game. Like, just this whole season felt cursed, but it looks like they dodged a bullet there. My first thought is that this is how normal franchises behave when they have an injury or a hole in the roster, and that we got so used to that the last couple of years where whether it was first base 2 years ago or it was shortstop a year ago, you know, like, this is the things that we're going to talk about between the Cooper move and a couple others is putting a coherent roster together. It's what normal franchises do, and we started getting used to the chaos. And it took them a couple of weeks to figure out what they wanted to do, but they're making the right moves, you know? Rafaela to shortstop when you have a plethora of outfielders that can play every day was the right move. And when your power-hitting first baseman, one of your top two hitters, goes on the 60-day IL, you have to find a way to get through 2 months. That's a third of the season. And finding a platooning first base combination that can hit for power a decent amount and at least hold their own defensively is what good franchises do. And whether that was a Chaim Bloom or an ownership problem in the past doesn't really matter. They're making legitimate moves that make sense to me. And we talked about Brandon Belt and Garrett Cooper last week, and it seemed like one of those should happen, and it did.
Yeah, Cooper, 33 years old, was slashing 270, 341, 432 with a homer with the Cubs. Plays really good defense at first. He's been pretty consistent over his career at like hitting 260, 10 to 15 home runs, getting on base a lot. Is a really solid depth move for a situation like this when your main guy is out for several months. So really kind of refreshing to see that them finally make a move like that. And one that we will talk about in a second with Tom Smith. So the next one, injury, or I guess before we move on, I know you really wanted to have some parting words for Pablo Reyes. Would you like to send him off?
We really needed Jake here for this. I know that that was his hero in 2023. It was definitely a good story a year ago, but it just got to a point where he was back playing at, you know, a minor league level, and he wasn't doing a whole lot other than pitching the ninth inning in a 17-0 win the other day was kind of the highlight for Reyes this year. So I think we all appreciated his contributions on a lesser team. Well, what ended up being a lesser team a year ago. And, you know, I agree with you on Cooper. I think that he has had some injury issues of his own in the past, but I don't think that this is just damaged goods that the Cubs got rid of either. You know, they had Michael Busch, who emerged and proved himself as an everyday player for the Cubs at first base, and they were able to call up Mervis as well, and Cooper just kind of ended up being expendable, and they were able to get a team to pay the salary. So, you know, I don't think that it's somebody that was just, I guess he was sort of on the scrap heap, but it was a situation for Chicago where he just kind of didn't fit in because some other players had stepped up.
Yeah. Then Masataka Yoshida became the 14th player the Red Sox currently have on the IL, the 16th player to hit the IL overall this season with a sore thumb, retro to April 29th. And my immediate question to you, Bob, is he really hurt, or does Cora just sick and tired of answering questions about why he's not playing him?
Yeah, we got a little fired up. Maybe I got a little fired up about that last week. But the crazy thing was, after that episode last week, that nonsense continued for like three more days. It was, you know, Devers is going to be back, and there's the Tyler O'Neill factor, and then Yoshida sat for like two or three more days, and Rob Refsnyder was facing right-handed pitching and hitting third, and it just was very clear that they will not put him into the field unless their players get ejected. That's the only time that it's happened so far this year, so it's very possible that Cora just got sick of it and said, all right, we're gonna do this so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah. At least puts it on pause for 10 days.
Yeah.
The Red Sox also added Zach Short, who is on, as our time of recording, is on the 40-man, but not on the Major League roster yet, although it appears he may be added to the roster and start tomorrow. Infielder acquired for cash from the Mets. What do you think of this move, and where do you think he ends up kind of getting the bulk of his playing time? Is he at second base until Grissom comes back? Bench bat, what's his role?
Yeah, I think he's just going to be a bench bat. I think he's going to be David Hamilton, and this is just another example of them kind of figuring out, all right, here are the starters. This is going to be our main roster going forward, figuring out first base, figuring out designated hitter, and now they're figuring out the middle infield because Von Grissom's going to be back within, sounds like, 2 days, potentially Friday, that he gets activated. He was ready to be activated for this series, but ended up getting the flu. So you would think that it's going to be Rafael at short and Grissom at second, and they should both play every day. And that Zach Short, who has second base, shortstop, and third base ability, is just going to be the quintessential backup infielder at every position who can fill in and not really hit a whole lot because, you know, he has a career average of 172 with a 266 on base and a 29% strikeout rate in 189 games. So we shouldn't expect anything with the bat from Zach Short, but he just will be seemingly a backup infielder if he, in fact, ends up on the active roster.
Does the timing of this move feel weird to you at all, given that it appears Grissom will return any day now, and the middle infield has been an absolute shambles the entire first month? Does it feel weird that now, when it is basically figured out they made a move for someone in the infield?
I get what you're saying, but I think that they probably gave these players as much of a chance as they possibly could. Emmanuel Valdez has a 439 OPS going into play tonight. And David Hamilton has a 602 OPS. And as we've talked plenty about, just really can't. I just don't think you can count on him to be a defensive backup infielder with what we've seen from him. So I don't think either of them are offering a whole lot, either with the bat or the glove. And they're probably just thinking, we need some. This guy can't hit either, but neither have Valdez or Hamilton, and he can back up every position, and they're just able to kind of see the pieces of the puzzle a little bit more. But I get what you're saying. This would have been a nice move a week or two ago, but I don't know that Short was available. He played 10 games for the Mets in this season, so I think it's just some names popped up that they felt fit into this puzzle a little bit that weren't available midway through April. Specifically Cooper.
Yeah, for sure. Speaking of Cooper, his potential partner there, Sox today added Dom Smith, who is in the lineup tonight, who will report to the majors, as he very clearly already did. Garrett Cooper, as you mentioned, miraculously avoided any injury there. So is your expectation to see those two platoon at first base, or you think Dom takes over at DH in the short term, potentially long term, after Yoshida comes back? Or what do you kind of see the role of Cooper and Smith and potentially Yoshida?
Yeah, I think it's going to be, unless someone really steps up, I think it's going to be a pretty strict platoon when Yoshida is back. And I think what Cooper has is the right-handed bat that we've talked about. You know, it fits with Cassis out. They were so left-hand heavy that I think it's good to have a right-hand bat with Cooper where he can fill in at first base as well as DH, or be brought into games at either of those positions, where, you know, Brown having the left-handed bat can kind of platoon in a similar way. I guess Yoshida would be the DH, so Brown would be more likely. Smith. I keep calling him Brown. But talking about Smith, he would be the left-hander that you would see more at first base. So I think that that'll be a platoon at that position. And, you know, with Smith, he got a ton of run last year with Washington, you know, well over 500 plate appearances. And what he did differently, because, I mean, he's played 7 or 8 years in the league now, is that he really improved his contact rate. It was up to 82% on Fangraphs after having a 75% career rate. And as a result of that, he struck out just 15.5% of the time after he had been 22% for the rest of his career. So I think that, you know, he showed something when he was in Washington a year ago. I don't know that he's a full-time player on a good team, but I think that's kind of something tangible that he made improvements on, and he's still just 29 years old. So I don't think it's going to be anything groundbreaking that we're going to watch, but, you know, it's progress. It's not Frenchy Cordero. It's not moving somebody from another position to play first base, which we've seen, and that has been the answer. And I don't know. I mean, do you think this is something that goes back to ownership, where finally they said, yeah, sure, we'll give you $2 or $3 million to go plug some holes this time around, and that they didn't do that last year and the year before and just told Ian Bloom to figure it out? Like, that's where my mind goes, is that they say, yeah, sure, we'll make an addition, we'll invest in that, in the team. Is that coming from some sort of management or ownership in your mind?
I really don't think so. Okay. I find it really hard to believe that they wouldn't be like, yeah, we're not going to spend $1 million to find some guy to plug a hole to make us a competitive team. That just seems insane.
Yeah.
It just seems like...
I know, but it happened for so long.
It did, but I think that was just kind of Bloom's style, was he was so far out on the edges of this roster that he was like galaxy branding himself.
Yeah.
But it didn't need to get that complicated. It could have been as simple as Dom Smith and Garrett Cooper.
It's very possible. I don't know. I don't have the answer for it, but something just felt a little bit different this time around. You know, maybe Theo got in someone's ear. I don't know.
Great point. This could be the Theo effect as well.
Could be.
I would love for that to be the case. Do you think they will make an outside the org move like this for the starting pitching? Something we talked about on a prior episode when they had a bazillion injuries on guys, and now it appears that some of them may be close to returning, so it may not be needed necessarily. But on name value, the current rotation is not going to blow anyone away, but it is doing extremely well. So do you think they feel comfortable with what they've got, or do you think they might make a move at some point?
No, I still think they're comfortable with what they've got, especially with Pivetta and Bayo being maybe one turn, maybe two turns away. It sounds like Whitlock is still kind of feeling something in his side, so he might be further out. But we haven't talked about Cooper Criswell much, if at all. And he looks pretty good. Like, not somebody that you want long term, not somebody that is going to dominate great lineups, but San Francisco is a pretty good lineup. And he's not striking guys out, but he's mixing up his pitches, and he's got a pitch that cuts in on lefties and another one that goes away, and he's kind of using four pitches to perfection, and he's throwing strikes, and he's had some short innings, and it's all kind of come out to, you know, he's walking 1.5 guys per 9 innings, and he's striking out 6 per 9 innings, albeit in 16 innings this year, but that's not much different than the 7 per 9 that he has in his short career. So I think that Criswell, you know, that's someone that they guaranteed money to. And we were surprised by it at the time in December. I think it was like the first move that they made for a major league contract. And he's filled in pretty well. And I think that he'll continue to be that sixth guy, and that Winkowski can fill in as needed. And then you could be running into something with Richard Fitz later in the year, who has been pitching pretty deep into games at AAA. And has maintained his velocity. So, I don't know. I think that they got by with losing 3 out of 5 here, and they still have the best starter ERA in the league and the best overall ERA in the league. So unless, you know, they lost their entire rotation, it's hard for me to see it.
Yeah, and Cooper Criswell, the $1 million baby. He was actually, so before you brought it up, he was a guy that I was going to bring up later in the show as really doing the job in whichever role he's in, obviously thrust into the starter's role now. But yeah, that's, I don't think we should kind of let that go under the radar. And like you said, he's not striking out a lot of people, but he's also not giving up a lot of base runners at all, which has allowed the Red Sox stay in it. And shockingly, Red Sox lead the major leagues in shutouts.
Yeah.
Not something I would have thought a month into the season.
No, I wouldn't have thought any of this. And especially if you said that you're going to get 2 starts from Pivetta and 3 or 4 from Bayo and 4 from Whitlock, and then that they're all going to go out and that they're not really going to miss a beat here. And they've continued to win series, and they're playing some good teams between Cleveland and the Cubs and San Francisco. You know, these aren't world beaters, and we got to see it against the AL East. But, you know, Criswell, it was Cleveland and San Francisco, and he threw 10 shutout innings combined in those 2 games.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seemed to be good luck. You know, his FIP is 3.35. You know, it's higher than his 1.65 ERA, but he's throwing strikes and getting ground balls, and he's not a name. You know, I thought that they were screwed when they started putting names like that in there to, yeah, to replace. I mean, Chase Anderson, I don't think, 36-year-old, I don't think that we're going to see a whole lot from him. He didn't look good the other day. I think that that's really, you want that to be your 13th arm, your long man out of the bullpen. You know, I think he had two saves, that you want him coming in with a 9-0 lead and pitching three innings rather than starting and pitching three innings. So I don't think he'll be the answer, but I don't know. I am blown away by the adjustments that have been made to all of the pitchers' pitch mixes and who has filled in successfully. But like you said, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah. You know what I think is interesting? Mostly funny, but the Red Sox themselves have like been saying, yeah, we didn't expect our pitchers to be this good either. It's surprising us too. Normally when this happens, it's like, see, you guys doubted us. We always knew we could have, like, we had the right guys in the right place and they were going to be able to succeed. Like Cora said today, he's like, no, we didn't expect these numbers. It's great though, right? It's like, I'm glad they feel the same way.
Cora is, to me, just seems more honest than ever and kind of in that just like last yeah, year of his contract, I don't give a shit mentality.
And like normally a team grabs a hold of that and does the like the us versus the world kind of thing for motivation. He's just right, like, nah, we didn't know. This is great.
I know. And I mean, he even called out, I thought the most interesting thing that Cora said over the last week, and this is a name that we talked about in the offseason, but he said, you know, that's why JT isn't here when they kept asking about Yoshida, yeah, why he's not playing in the outfield. And he very much, to me, that's just a, yeah, we wanted to have Justin Turner back. Justin Turner wanted to come back here. And I don't know if anyone's looked at Justin Turner's stats, but he is destroying the ball in Toronto, especially in recent days. And that's someone that we really could have used in Boston, especially with, I mean, I guess they've, there was a week where, you know, the DH was occupied, but with Casas out, Turner played a good first base last year. And he had a 114 WRC plus year, 96 RBIs and 23 bombs. And he goes to Toronto. He's 39 years old and he's hitting 298 with four bombs and he has a 154 WRC plus. Like, that is, now that you know in hindsight that first base was going to be a hole for you, Turner would have been the perfect guy to slide into that spot. But what's done is done.
And he was out there for a very long time, and we were kind of waiting for him to get scooped up, but it just never happened.
Yeah, we talked about that probably in February.
Yeah, true. Some positive injury notes. It appears Vaughn Grissom is on track to start on Friday. Great news. Pivetta having a rehab start tomorrow, or today, as you are listening. Brian Bale scheduled for a rehab start on Tuesday. And shockingly, Joely Rodriguez cleared waivers and was sent to Worcester, which means, Bob, why did no one want him, and how long until he's back?
This is your guy, right? Shouldn't you be answering this?
I mean, he's not
my guy.
What
went wrong with Joely Rodriguez?
I said I wasn't shocked he made the roster because he was left-handed. That doesn't make him my guy.
Do you know that he had a 6.55 ERA a year ago and a 6.55 ERA this year?
Yeah, wow. He's so consistent. Who doesn't want that? Like, that's what you want out of your bullpen, is consistency.
You don't see it land on that number two consecutive years too often, do you?
No, you don't.
He didn't walk as many guys this time around, so that wasn't the problem. It was,
I don't think he got a chance to, right?
That he was getting hit really hard. So yeah. I think that's why nobody wanted him. But
yeah. Hey, well, anyway, on the fun stuff, Grissom comes back. Who goes away?
I would think that this is going to be because they have options and because enough is enough. I think it's going to be that we'll see Valdez sent down and that we'll see Hamilton sent down.
Ooh. So we just cannot get rid of Bobby Dalbec. And I
would think that Short would be the backup. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, Dalbec has an option as well, so
I feel like if you just added Cooper and Dom Smith, what's the point of Bobby Dalbec?
It's true.
But you're right. He won't go
There's
away.
So many moving parts that I feel like I'm one off with the math in my head right now, because we have already seen the Yoshida move. So my thought when those three players were coming in today with...
Well, it's got to be... what's his face? Short hasn't been added to the major league roster yet. So it's got to be... He is on the 40-man, but a move's got to be made for him and Grissom. So I think you're right. There's two guys that have got to go.
Yeah. I'm looking at it again. It's got to be Dalbec. And his strikeout rate is 48%. That can't go on any longer. And you're right. There's two first basemen that are on the roster now. So
I think it's finally the end.
Yeah. I think my math was off by one player as I was trying to figure out the puzzle pieces there. It's got to be Dalbec as well.
Yeah. I mean, we did kind of talk about it a little bit. Who are the, when Pivetta and Bayo return, who are the two from the rotation that go? Or I guess two pitchers that go.
Yeah, so I would think it would probably be Uwasawa would be one of them. And I would think that Anderson would go to the bullpen for that spot. And then that's where it gets tough, because Zach Kelly has looked very good. He seems to be, the velocity is back. And everybody that got looks at him, AAA, said that he kind of looked too good to be there. But Weissert has been excellent as well. So we're going to talk about the bullpen in a little bit. I mean, with Jansen, Martin, Slayton, Bernardino, Weissert, and Kelly, don't see, the only guy that I could see go would be Kelly, but he's looked good. So I think it would be Boozer and Uwasawa that would no longer be in the bullpen and get sent out, and that Anderson and Winkowski would move to the bullpen, and then Pivetta and Bayo would return to the rotation. Is my math better on this one?
I think so. That all made sense to me.
What do you think? I mean, I would love to see Boozer continue to get some run up here, and I think it's a great story, but...
I mean, what are the chances that they just axe Anderson altogether? We got a 5.52 ERA, got worked a bit in his last start. I think it makes more sense, or it would be better for the team to keep Taylor there, or Kelly there, and just cut Anderson loose.
And keep Boozer up. To have two lefties.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very possible. I wouldn't miss having Chase Anderson around, and I really think that that's more of a, like I said, 13th arm that you have in there is a long guy in blowouts, so that's probably something that you can move on from.
All right. Let's move on to some pie.
Oh.
We've got four little categories / question that we're going to hand out portions of pie to different folks or multiple folks or different things. And let's start with Red Sox 1 month into the season. Pretty good start. Who is most responsible for the good start to the season, and how much pie are they getting, and what other portions of pie are you handing out for the Red Sox good start?
All right, so I'm going to start with, I'm going to split the pie up with 75% having to do with the pitching, but not all to the pitchers. I'm going to give 50% to the pitchers themselves for executing, mostly the rotation that came into the game on Wednesday night with a 2.00 starter ERA, leading Major League Baseball. And a team ERA of 2.59. And the second best team is the Mariners at 3.03. So they are basically a half run better than any team in baseball. And as mentioned, there's a few guys missing. So the players play, and they have to get the majority of the credit. So I'm giving 50% to the pitching, giving 25% to the Breslow-Bailey combination for figuring out the tweaks that were needed to make with those pitchers. I think that's just been such a big part that we're seeing all of the same names. We kept waiting for them to go out and get somebody, and the guy they got is out for the year, and Chris Sale got traded, and they have exponentially improved. So the other 25%, I'm going to give 15% to Alex Cora and 10% to the lineup, because although there are some guys that have stepped up, the Abreus and the Tyler O'Neills of the world, I think the infield that we watched up until the past week or so was so punchless that I really just think the majority of the credit and the reason that they are, what, after the win that just ended tonight, 5 games over .500, it all comes back to the pitching for me. Almost all. 75% all.
Yeah, that's pretty close to where I was going. I guess I probably should have made some sort of little tart there for Breslow and co. But I went 80% to the starters, 15% to the relievers, and 5% to the lineup.
95-5, huh?
Yes.
I think it's fair. It's not that much different than what I'm... Yeah, I said 10% for the lineup. I gave a little more to the...
Yeah. Give a little more credit to the pitching coach and the staff, and which is
right. Fair. Yeah, but I think it's the same concept. And, if they had not made those tweaks and they brought back the same staff with the same output as a year ago, I don't know. We could be looking at not quite the White Sox, but one tier above that. And this has just been... and, of course, these are not guys that we wrote off. I think we all saw what Tanner Houck can be when he's at his best. And we saw what Cutter Crawford can be when he threw 6 no-hit innings or so a year ago when he's at his best. But it's, can they do that night in and night out? And Houck has done that all but once. And Crawford, you know, we saw a couple of games where he started to hit a wall in the 5th inning. And that was my concern. You know, a lot of that time last year was long outings out of the bullpen and maybe spent a couple of months in the rotation. He's held up well. He's looked strong in the 6th, 7th inning in the last, I don't know if it's 2 or 3 starts now, and he's maintained velocity later. So, I mean, I'm sold that, assuming that their arms can hold up, you know, that these guys are a lot more consistent than we had seen previously. And we'll see if Pivetta can continue it, because he did it for the last 3 or 4 months of last year. And he came out in his first start this year, and it was the same thing. Just, like, good strikeout rate, pitching deeper into the games, and I don't know. I mean, we're talking about Nick Pivetta coming back and being potentially the 3rd or 4th best pitcher on this team. It's a whole different story than relying on him to be your ace.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the preseason pods... we had a question about kind of what was the floor and the ceiling of this pitching staff. And I remember I asked you, flash forward 6 months to the end of the year, actual results, were they closer to the floor or the ceiling? And you and I can't remember what Jake said, but you and I definitely agreed they were probably going to be closer to the floor than the ceiling. The fact that they've had these injuries and then still been able to churn out just an absurd starting pitching line across the board is insane. And definitely needs to have a lot of the credit for the success that they've had. I like your move in giving some to Breslow and co, and I probably should have made an allotment there as well. But very clearly, the starting pitching is what's gotten them here, leading the league in shutouts, having the lowest ERA by a mile across the league. It's incredible.
Yeah. Great.
Now, we know that they have run into a buzzsaw of injuries. What unit are you most confident in surviving this onslaught of injuries? Position players, the pretty shallow starting pitchers that seem to be able to figure it out, just continue to throw no names in there. Relief pitchers have kind of been able to find the same success. Which area, what's your portion of confidence going out to all of these?
if I can split those up, I'm trying to kind of reverse in my brain here, because the order of it would be starting pitching, the outfield, then the relief pitching, and then the infield. I would put the infield at 1% in terms of how confident I am.
Yeah.
I think that this may be a little too scorching, but I think that Zeidan Rafaela, an injury to him could be as damning to this team as almost anybody, because then you're just back at that middle infield disaster that we're going to be sitting here talking about. You know, is Jose Iglesias still available, or, you know, how's this going to work with him and Manuel Valdez in the middle, or something along those lines? Like, if Rafaela and or Grissom go out, you're back to square one. And Rafaela's role, like, I think long-term being in the outfield, that's where I'm going to want him long-term in center field. But he's just so important at shortstop, and I think that a lot of things have fallen into place since they've made that move. Thank God that we, you know, that we don't have to watch Hamilton, and that we don't have to watch Kike Hernandez from a year ago. So they've already lost Story, and we've already seen what second base looks like with Grissom not there. And there were days, those, you know, all-time horrible lineups that look like split squads that we were referencing a week ago, were because the infield was as bad as it gets. It was Dahlbeck at an 0.30 average, and it was Valdez at 150, and it was Hamilton, and Devers was out. So we know what that infield is going to look like. So that's a long-winded way of me saying that I'm least confident there. 60% with the starting pitching, because I think we've seen that as well. The outfield, I think they have a decent amount of depth. I think Rob Refsnyder is a key piece. We've seen him fill in, and he's had to play with the decision to not have Yoshida be a DH. They can move guys around, and they could always, you know, if the infield was in good shape, you've got Rafaela that is the fifth guy that can play the outfield as well. So I'm second most confident there of about 30%. And then what does that leave? 9% that I'll give to the relief pitchers.
Interesting. So I was going 45 for the starters, 45 for the relievers, 10 for the outfield, and 5 for the infield. Completely agree with you on the infield. I mean, we've seen the options that they have rolled out up to this point, and who's there now. That depth has been fully tapped. There's nothing left.
Right.
That it is at its breaking point. So went with 5% there. I feel like it's pretty close with the outfield too, because, I mean, you mentioned you've got Rafaela that you can kind of toss around, and there's a couple other guys, but it's still pretty damn shallow. Why I feel pretty confident about the relief pitching, though, is because you have guys that that are in the rotation now that can swing over there and still be successful, beyond just kind of the other options that they potentially have in AAA. I just feel like there's more avenues that you can kind of play with stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel more confident. It seems like you and I kind of flipped on the relief pitching in the outfield there. So what makes you so confident in the outfield?
I think it's William Abreu. I mean, I've just been sold on him over the last month, the more that I've watched. And it's a healthy, for the moment, Tyler O'Neill, you know, his injury being a fluky concussion situation. And Duran is back hitting as a contact hitter and running, and had a great game on Tuesday night. So between Duran and O'Neill and Abreu, with Refsnyder as a backup and Rafaela as a fifth guy who can play there, you know, I still kind of lump Yoshida in with that group. I guess we can't, but DH isn't really part of the pie that we're going over here. So that's a sixth name that I would have mixed in the preseason that can play the outfield. I just think there's good depth there, and that's why I was confident early on with moving Rafaela. I really like this outfield group, but it's Abreu's emergence. Yeah. Clutch hitting, and he really just looks strong defensively. I mean, he's hitting the ball hard. He is knocking in runs in a key part in the lineup. You know, he's hitting fourth almost every night, and he's holding his own, and in some cases making some really good plays in a large right field at Fenway Park, and stealing bases here and there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right, that's fair. All right, on to the next one, kind of specifically dissecting the bullpen, who from the bullpen do you trust the most? How you divvying up that pie?
All right. So I looked at this as in their role, and I don't know if that's how you anticipated answering the question, but in their role, how I trust these different guys.
You don't put
guys.
A pie in rolls instead of crust.
Yeah. Well, that's good. In where he is slotted right now, Justin Slayton ends up getting 40% of the pie for me, because I don't want to say he is the reliever I trust most on the team, because I wouldn't, the reliever I trust most, I would put into the closer role. And I still think that Kenley Jansen should be there. But with Slayton, I mean, this guy just looks like the closer of the future. And has just pitched key innings and has been brought in to get a save this year. Has the 0.52 ERA. You know, the K rate isn't blowing you away, but it was good in the minor leagues. I think that probably come around eventually. His FIP is 2.07. His walk rate is 1 per 9. He's walked 2 guys in 17 and a third. So I think that this was just a great move that he has immediately shown, outside of being forced into an extra inning game in the opening series, or maybe it was the second series for his first appearance. Outside of that, he has just looked so confident, and I think will continue to be put into more clutch situations, and may even, before the end of the season, supplant Martin as the eighth inning guy. We'll see. You know, Martin has just had some shaky outings, and I think he deserves months in that role before switching him and Slayton, but it wouldn't surprise me if that happened in July or August if these trends continued. So I'd put Slayton at 40%. I would put Jansen at 25%. I would put Greg Weissert in there. I'd give him 15. So what's that, 80? And then I'll give Bernardino, Martin, and Zach Kelly all 7%.
That's what over 100%.
Was it 101?
We had 15% left and then handed out 21.
Oh, shit.
Math is hard.
It is.
What did you right, five, get, five,
five
for each?
Then.
There
yeah.
you go.
That would make more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what you kind of laid out there makes sense. I think Slayton might be the pitcher that I trust the most. It's kind of crazy just because of the walks from Kenley Jansen, although I still believe when he comes in, it's game over. It's kind of funny to look. His whip is like 1.3, which is almost on par with his 1.8 ERA, which is just kind of funny to look at just because of the walks. He's basically walking one an inning, so as long as he's not giving up hits, which he hasn't yeah. been, then it all works out okay. Slayton, though, is not walking anybody, and he's been the most used relief pitcher besides technically Winkowski, who's gotten starts, in the entire bullpen, and he's walked 2, struck out 14 across 17 innings. He's just been absolutely shut down. So I think I'm gonna go 50% with Slayton, 30% for Jansen, and 10 and 10 for Bernardino and Weissert. I know I'm leaving some guys off, but you only have so much pie, people, you know. But those are the guys I feel really, really confident about when they come into the game. And I'll tell you what, I have no idea what to do with Chris Martin.
Yeah, that probably is a discussion for another day. I'm glad that you have the same confidence in Slayton as I do. I know Jake does as well. And you're right. I mean, that 17 and a third, as we turn the calendar to May, is a lot of innings. Not in a reckless way. You know, he's only thrown in 10 games. But he's been efficient. There's been a lot of times that he's been able to throw 2 innings because he's not walking anybody. And he's just 7 Ks per 9. It doesn't mean that he's striking a ton of guys out either. The ball is going in play, and it's not being hit hard. His FIP is 2.07. You know, I mean, it's backed up by the indicators there. So, yeah, I mean, Chris Martin, it's hard to know. He's going to be 38 in a month. However, there was a year and a half from the end of 2022 to the start of this season where he had the best ERA of any reliever in all of baseball. So I still think that he should get every chance to figure it out. It's not like there is something crazy that has happened that is concerning, like his velocity is way down. He's got a 406 BABIP, you know, left on base percentage. I think that this is just a small sample. I don't know this. You know, we need to see more. But I think that it's a small sample and that he'll get right and probably be the eighth inning guy for the majority of the year. But like I said, could get to July and we see that flip. But I'm not sounding the alarm just yet on Martin.
I think I'm nearly there. Just because of he's had a bad, basically just because of how good Slayton's been and how bad he's been recently.
Yeah.
Here, I think you're giving away games the more you just kind of run him out there if he's still in this form. So I think if you're going to make a change, it should happen sooner.
It's possible.
Yeah. Last portion of pie to hammer out here was one that you added, which I really think is a fun conversation. Who/what is to blame for all of these major league pitching injuries? You could say this year it's been on the rise over the past few years, but where are you dishing out your pie for this one?
So this just kind of popped in my head because there have been these, I'm trying to pull this up, fastball velocity leaders going into the season. And this was something on, you know, Rates and Barrels is a podcast that Eno Saris and he and Derek Van Riper were talking about this in the preseason. And it's crazy since they've talked about this, every time that there is a pitching injury, not every time because there's so many of them, but all of the hard throwing starters have one by one been going down this season. And the only one that's left in the top 10 from a year ago in fastball velocity is Hunter Green. And he hasn't exactly been, you know, the epitome of health. He was out a lot of last season, and he's a guy that get up to 103, so it wouldn't shock me if he got hurt as well. But this was the top 10 in velocity of the fastball a year ago, as Bobby Miller was 1, Hunter Green was 2. So Miller is hurt with a shoulder, and then after that, 3 through 10 are now all out with significant arm injuries. Sandy Alcantara, Tommy John, Yuri Perez, Tommy John, Grayson Rodriguez went on the IL today with a shoulder. Spencer Strider, some version of Tommy John. I think that's his second. Shohei Ohtani, Tommy John, that's his second. Shane McClanahan, Jesus Luzardo went on the IL a week ago. And Garrett Cole, who's on the 60-day IL. And there are names beyond that, in that it's not like you get down to the 11 to 20 range and everybody's healthy. I mean, everybody that I just mentioned there was between 96.7 and 99.1. with the fastball velocity a year ago. So it's just hard for me to not put that for half of the pie. I'm going 50% with just maximizing velocity. And I think that it's an unnatural motion. I think that everybody is throwing harder than ever because that's, but whether that's a starter or a reliever, and I know that that's something that the Tampa Bay Rays have brought in a lot of different arms that have had injuries in the past, or they're trying to make adjustments. So that's my next one, pitch mix and spin changes, 20%. So I think it's the velocity, the pitch mix, and the spin changes that is like 70% of the injuries, but I give the velocity a little bit more. Because you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. It's like, goes back to steroids in the 90s, right? I mean, you don't do steroids and, well, you're out of the league. And if you do, as you got into the 2000s, you're risking getting caught and not going to the Hall of Fame and whatever else. And I feel like this is kind of similar, where it's like, all right, do I make a pitch mix change, go to driveline and figure out how I can maximize as much spin as humanly possible and get my velocity up 2 miles an hour to survive? But then you end up with Tommy John surgery 2 years later. So, you know, what's worth it? So I gave that about 70%. Let me see if I can figure out the rest of my math.
You've got 30 left.
All right, I said, I'm going to explain this a little bit. 15% has to do with, like, AAU and youth baseball. 10% has to do with not enough long toss. And 5% is pitch clock. Everybody talked about the pitch clock. It's not bad. That's getting 5%. 10%, growing up, all we did was just play a long toss, right? Got strong arms, go out there, throw as far as you can. We're not trying to maximize our velocity or our pitch mix or our spin. We're just trying to throw as far as we can every day, get a little bit farther out. No one's playing long toss anymore. And then I got 15% for the AAU because you got people pitching for all different sorts of teams. You're playing for one coach on Monday, a different coach on Tuesday. You're playing your youth league. You're playing AAU. You're pitching on all these different teams. And I think that it's just causing more kids' arms to get damaged before they're fully grown, whether that causes issues when they're younger or, you know, the residual effects into adulthood. But I think some of the quotes that we saw that kind of shocked me the most in the last couple of weeks when this was going on in April was the sheer percentage of surgeries that kids under 18 are getting. That has what increased more. I think it's shocking in April every year how many pitchers get hurt, and there's more of that than ever in the major leagues, but the percentage of youth injuries and surgeries for arm injuries in kids is exponential. So
I actually went
to 100.
I think it did. So I actually went the majority of my pie that way. 40% to parents and amateur coaching. 30% to the MLB's lust for velocity.
Yeah.
And then the pitch clock was like 10%, and I forgot what I was going to give 20% to, but it was something else. Whatever, I guess, if I'll remember that later. But kind of expand on your point. So Jeff Passan wrote a book, really good book, called The Arm about 10 years ago. And also recently, a couple weeks ago, had a thread about a conversation that he had returning to conversations with Neil Eletrosh about the shockingly high number of Tommy John surgeries on high school players. How back 10 years ago, and even when Dr. Eletrosh started doing these Tommy John surgeries, it was the majority was done on major leaguers. And it's flipped to now the majority of the surgeries he's performing is on high schoolers. That, to me, is on a couple different things. I think it is fueled by MLB, just their, you know, scouts. And, I mean, you're much more likely to get a seven-figure check for throwing 100 than you are for 92. So the pressure that puts on kids to throw as absolutely hard as they can is extremely high during the age where they're going to be drafted.
Yeah.
But it really falls more to me on parents and coaches, kind of, as you said, limiting the number of innings and pitches and letting guys throw curveballs far before they're ready to throw curveballs, kind of thing. And that just needs to be monitored at a much more tight level. And as you mentioned, guys are playing for three different coaches over the course of a weekend. And if they're the best player on those teams, they're going to pitch all three of those days and rack up like 350 pitch counts,
right,
as a 16-year-old.
And I don't think that, like, when you watch the Little League World Series and you see that somebody hits a certain pitch count and they're out for that many days, you can't regulate that across multiple leagues and multiple coaches. So that's great But I don't know that if it's doing anything if you then go and play AAU over the weekend after you threw on a Thursday night.
Yeah. You got to have enough time to rest. Got to ice that out. And yep. Particularly when you're younger and your arm is just not even close to being developed, you can't just go all loosey-goosey with it.
No, you got to play more long toss.
Yeah. So that's the, I think, where the majority of it lies. And then it is also additionally fueled by MLB just wanting the fastest possible pitching they can get, regardless of if there's any control there or not. But they feel like, well, you figure out control, let's just get the absurd velocity and go from there.
Yeah, and I think, like, I've alluded to this a couple of times where it's, you know, what do you think of the so-and-so? They're now throwing 98 when they were throwing this a year ago. And my first reaction is, I hope he doesn't get hurt, which is not good.
Yeah. Because I can't remember what that other 20% was. I'm going to just go 45% on the coaches, 35% on MLB, and 15% on the pitch clock. Or 20% on the pitch clock.
There you go. All right, we did it.
There's 100. Yeah.
Really, someone is listening to this, writing it all down. We're going to get a vicious email over the next week. We weren't even close.
Probably not. But, you know, I feel like sometimes there's leftovers when you're eating a pie.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's assuming that we went under 100% on all of them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there you go. So there's our pie for... all the pie we're handing out for our nice little pie-sode. Got a few listener questions to jump into. Patio D from about a week ago, right after we recorded our last episode. Given the lack of roster depth and injuries, what do you think would count as a successful season for the team? And beyond the wins and losses, are there certain players you want to hit specific benchmarks? Are there particular players from the minors you would like to see play good number of games with the big club? Just an aside, the injuries are bad, but I would say the Sox situation isn't helped by the dog roster construction and half decade leaving them with no real depth. Also, what is the best real-life baseball player out of you all? I certainly don't think it's me. I think you, Bob.
I don't know. Probably. I mean, am I the only one that is still currently playing baseball? So if this is a current state today... probably, but Jake also said that he could throw slow enough coming out of the bullpen that he could strike somebody out and potentially get through an inning giving up one run on an episode this offseason. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It could be Jake.
The last time I played a season of organized baseball, I led the team in strikeouts as a hitter, not a pitcher, and I batted 179. So I feel pretty good saying it's not me.
That's, you know,
I was a fucking windmill up there, man.
At least you went down swinging.
I was making a very earnest statement about how pro renewable energy I am. I'm all about that Green New Deal.
Swing hard, just in case you hit it.
Yeah, exactly. Boy, hitting it is the actual hard part, though. All right, so back to the main crux of the question.
Yeah, there's a lot of good questions in there.
Yeah, what do you got?
All right, so let's start with one. What do you think would count as a successful season for the team? Geez, the goalposts are kind of moving.
It already feels successful to me, right?
Like I know. And I don't want to get ahead of myself because there were times in the last two seasons when they had that ridiculous June 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's right.
When they went into the trade deadline still... kind of in it last year with there were two games out and they only had three starters and they were throwing openers on the other two games. The reason the goalposts seem like they're like, so if you said these players are going to be hurt, everyone that we've talked about for the last month, and you asked me that on March 28th, so what would a successful season be? I don't even know if I would have said winning record. I would have said 75 wins probably if you gave me that roster.
And same now, thing, I believe it was Chris Cotillo tweeted out earlier, or Jim McCaffrey, one of the two. Red Sox currently have more players on the injured list than they have losses on the season, which is both an insane amount of people who are injured and not as many losses as we thought.
Right. And it also, like, we haven't talked about how much of a 40-man crunch they're going to run into here. I mean, they can put players on the 60, like Casas, which takes a player off it. But there's only so many guys you can do that with, and you don't want to do it unless it's either, one, a fringe player that it's not going to matter that they're out for 2 months, or you know that they're going to be out for that long, which I'm assuming Casas is. They don't have a whole lot of leeway to call guys up and send them down, and they're going to get into that need to get creative with roster moves. So I don't know at this point, like today, 500, knowing that you're getting reinforcements, I think a successful season would be 85 wins, 85 and 77, based on where we are today with this roster, with some significant players coming back.
Yeah, I think you're right. They're a game and a half out of first, third place. They are 5 games ahead of the Blue Jays, 6 games ahead of the Rays. I mean, this, it really does already feel like a successful season, given all of the injuries and things they've had to work through. The fact that they are 5 games above 500 and just nearly at the top, insane. It's insane. And so, yeah, I think I agree with you somewhere around, like, I wouldn't even go so far to say is, well, I guess we're looking at, like, baseline of a successful season. Yeah, you're right. At least 85 wins feels like it. That's a good spot.
I think for do you want to take the benchmarks first?
I don't know if I have any. I would have loved to see, I mean, I was rooting for, like, 40 bombs from Casas. It seemed like he was on his way to doing that. I would love to see O'Neill keep it up and repeat his 2021, but I wouldn't consider it an unsuccessful season if he didn't.
I want to see Jarren Duran, like, lead the league in steals, like, steal 50 bases.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I'd love to see Tanner Houck throw a perfect game.
How many in the history of baseball?
Is he going to throw?
Let's look it up. Have there been? There have been 24 perfect games in the history of baseball, and that's one of your benchmarks for this year.
Yeah, not only that.
It's we started a no-hitter.
A perfect Maddox.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, Houck at 160 and Crawford at 135. I got to give it another month. But, like, no one's running away with the Cy Young conversation right now. And I don't think it's reasonable to talk about them yet, but if, especially with Houck, with how few guys he is walking, which has always kind of been what we needed to see, if Houck is continuing to pitch this deep into games, striking guys out and walking nobody with an ERA around 2, we're going to be having Cy Young conversations about him in the summer. So, you know, that is...
I just thought of a realistic one for him.
Okay.
Again, kind of given all along those lines of all those things that you just mentioned, 180 innings for him to get to would be incredible. I'd be so happy.
Yeah. I think innings is a good... That's a good call out because they...
With only like 2 or 3 perfect games thrown in.
Sprinkled they haven't in wherever, had anyone... Last year like they didn't have anybody qualify with 162 innings to show up on any leaderboards. You could not see a Red Sox pitcher on a leaderboard. So that's a great call-out. Could we get 2 guys to throw 162 innings or more that we can actually look at on an ERA title leaderboard at the end of the year?
Yeah, love it. What was the other one? There was one more, right?
You want to see anyone from the minors play a specific number of games with the big club? And this is a good one as well.
Yeah, a specific number of games. We talked about Nico Cavadas last week. I was kind of surprised that they maybe didn't give him a chance, just given the crunch that was happening there. Although I do prefer, I think these 2 moves make more sense. I think it'd be kind of fun just to see what he can do. Not expecting a whole lot, but then I think after that, there's like half of the Portland Sea Dogs I think would be really fun, but it's probably too early.
Yeah, but I would think out of Anthony Meyer and Teal, once you get to that late August, early September, you can increase to 28 men on the roster, and you also don't burn the opportunity for Rookie of the Year next year or an extra year of service time or anything like that.
This is so probably going to shock you, Bob, but I would love to see Teal get like 30 games.
What? Oh, with the catcher thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so hard to know like how to order them based on the month. You know, they're all going to come up to AAA probably at or around the same time, and they might all come up to the majors together. If they're out of the playoff race, you could see them all getting the whole month of September up there. I agree. I think Teal will be up. 30 games seems reasonable, and the way that Meyer has been playing so far this year, I could see the same thing. So my kind of checkpoint would be for two of those guys. It would be great to see two of them make an appearance in September of this year.
I agree. Question from Mark. Is it sad that I get a positive feeling from Garrett Cooper, Dom Smith acquisitions? I'm scared by Franchi at first base.
Scarred.
Well, you know what? Both. Scared and scarred.
It's nightmares.
Yeah, I think, no. It's not a weird thing to be positive about those guys. I think we both agree that those are really good moves and nice moves that it's weird to see the Red Sox make, given the moves that they have made previously don't really seem to fall in line with doing positive things for the roster. So
I know
it does feel uncomfortable because we're not used to it, but it is a good thing.
Yeah, and that was what was uncomfortable was the amount of time that Franchi moved over to first base as a player that we weren't even sure should be on the team. Never mind playing a position that he really hadn't played in his career other than getting worked in the minor leagues to try to groom him for that. And then somehow Eric Hosmer ended up being the quasi-savior that year to like get them through the year and actually make routine plays on ground balls. So I don't blame you at all for being scarred by that. Yeah. And I think that was the whole point of this year, so that they can tread water for 2 months. And I mean, we don't know if it's going to be 2 months or 3 months. It's very much a doom discussion when they reference Casas. It's going to be a long time. It's going to be a while, you know. I don't, what is a while? And he went to the 60-day right away, so that was a, you know, he's not even going to be going out on a rehab assignment within 40-50 days. So
our last question from B. Lamonts on Twitter. Imagine Mookie Betts retires after this year to pursue bowling. And imagine Connor Wong has a 16-year career with Boston. What achievements and batting line and career numbers would Connor Wong have to have when he retired to make you feel like we won the Mookie trades? As we were talking about this before we started recording, my response was prime Mike Trout for 16 years is the only possible way to make it feel like we won that trade.
So I ended up looking at, on Baseball Reference, if you go to the Red Sox page, is the top 24 all-time players in WAR is front and center. Mookie Betts is 13th on that list all-time for, you know, if you add up all the seasons that they were here. Mookie Betts played 6 seasons with the Red Sox, and one of them was a 50-game end of year in 2014. So pretty much 5. And he surpassed 40. He had 42.2 WAR. Behind him on that list is Carlton Fisk at 17th with 39.5. So Carlton Fisk played in Boston for 10 years. I guess he's going to be Carlton Fisk for 16 years, and then he can be in the Mookie discussion. That seem reasonable?
No, of course not.
But that was my takeaway. It was just like Betts that he could even be 13th, that he was not a member of the team for that long. It was about 5 years.
That's insane. Like,
it is.
This is an extremely old franchise with a ton of incredibly good players. And Mookie Betts is just casually in 6 seasons putting up nearly top 10 WAR for the entire history of the franchise.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It is insane.
Oh, boy, is he good at baseball.
We can't sit here and revisit the past 200 episodes right now, can we?
I mean, we could. Like, realistically, should we for our own mental health and well-being? No.
Probably not. Go have a slice of pie and call it a night.
Yeah, in bed with whipped cream while weeping. All right. Yeah, that'll probably do it. That's a good place to end.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Spoken Geats. You can follow Bob at BobOsgood15. You can follow Jake at DevJake, even though he's not here. What a lazy bum. You can follow Over the Monster at Over the Monster. And of course, that's a great website. You gotta go check out all the awesome stuff we've got going on there. Thanks for listening, and we'll be with you next week.